This is the San Andreas Fault right here. And the soil changes from this side of the street to that side radically. Whoa. So that is very heavy clay, and this is kind of loamy.
Yeah.
And so the olive trees are much happier on this side of the street, but they're coping.
So the road itself is a fault line?
Yes.
It's in really nice shape, that road.
Well, it just got repaved. We'll see how long it lasts.
Yes, you are listening to Cider Chat. And though I was just standing on the San Andreas Fault Line in California, you could be sure that this episode is all about cider, wine, and fermenting with none other than Randall Graham of Bonnie Doon Vineyard. We first heard Randall on Cider Chat on episode 12. That was 4 years ago, and a lot has happened since. So I'm really pleased to bring you a very intimate conversation with a master winemaker and brand marketeer like no other. But first, let me tell you a little bit about this here podcast. My name is Rhea Windcaller, and I both produce and am your host on this cider-centric podcast that has interviews with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from all over the world in the land that we call Ciderville. And I imagine if you're listening, perhaps you have a spot of Ciderville in your backyard or hopefully in your region. Before we go to this main chat with Randall, let's dig into a little bit of news out and about in Ciderville.
There is a reason why we do it like this, ba-dum, ba-dum.
Yes, there is a reason why we do it like this and why we drink it like this and why cider is going up around the world. Recently, if you haven't heard, there's two new hard copy magazines or pamphlets, if you will, that just were produced and published in the UK. I have both of them right here on my desk, and the first one I want to tell you about is called Graffwood. This is spearheaded by Albert Johnson of Ross-on-Wye Cider and Perry Company, and also James Forbes of Little Pomona. They're all up in that area that is called Herefordshire in West Country. And the editorial that Albert Johnson wrote is just lovely. I mean, this is the type of reading and graphics in the actual pamphlet itself. It's a delight. I brought it out with me by the water while I've been taking this like bi-weekly break right now with Cider Chat, and just delved into it, really enjoying it. There's a couple different feature people here that you might know. Max Noel wrote about his mom, Jean Noel, and it's titled The Renaissance Woman, a very well-respected cider maker, again from the UK, a really lovely written from her son's perspective, not really knowing that she was this force to be reckoned with in the cider world, and how sometimes that gets lost on the children of cider makers. That's my takeaway from it. Then there's Fairies, Rams, and Wasps from Barney Butterfield. We had Barney Butterfield on the podcast. He's whimsical. He's delightful. He talked about pressing cider with the traditional way, using straw. Then there's Cider from Afar, Felix Nash. And then Apples, Yeast, and Blending with Tom Oliver. And then Cider Backwards with Elizabeth Pimblett. And she is, I believe, like the curator, the museum director at the Herefordshire Cider Museum. So that's quite a first start right out the gate for this new zine called Graffwood. It is a subscription-based. It's £6 per issue, and I would say absolutely worthwhile. Susanna Forbes, aka Little Pomona and Drink Britain, that's her Twitter handle, and Instagram feed sent this copy, and also the copy of the second zine that I want to talk to you about, which is called Full Juice. I have in hand right now the hard copy of Full Juice, and this is the first episode. It actually says episode one. That's kind of interesting, episode one for a zine, because it's not, episode kind of seems like something that's like a little bit different format, but you know what? It's their magazine, their boat, it's their rules. Go for it. And they can, because these are power hitters. You have Bill Bradshaw and Pete Brown. They will probably be familiar names. If you haven't heard of them, you should definitely know them by the fact that they wrote an award-winning book called The World's Best Ciders that came out a few years ago, but they've been deep into cider for quite a while. And then Gabe Cook, and he wrote a book called Ciderology. And again, Susanna Forbes. So this really nice format. They are covering news, events, releases, and awards, travel. In this issue, where you're provided 10 tips for summer trips. And that's all in that region of the world. So a little bit of the UK, Western Europe. Then there's some issue features, one called Juice Matters, kind of going on that same theme of the magazine. That's with Pete Brown. Throwing Practice, that's about the long pour, and some photos with Bill Bradshaw. And then Cider Regions, both in Great Britain and Ireland. And for those of us hopefully going to CiderCon in Oakland in 2020, Ireland's going to be the guests at that year's event. So a lot in here, a lot of really great stuff that, again, wouldn't you want to live in the UK just to be able to pick up this magazine? I hope it's a winner. I hope it gets lots of support. And it's another sign that cider is definitely going up.
Walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Ah, yes, walking through the orchard. You know, you're hearing those little ditties in the background, those little transition pieces, and that is myself and my cousin Jay having a humdinger of a time singing our favorite song called We Like Cider. And you could hear the full version of that song at the end of this here episode 188. So stay tuned for that. In the meanwhile, on last episode number 187 called We Want More Cider, that was all about interviews with cider makers and cider enthusiasts at the Hardcore Cider Tour that took place in June, out also in California. See, I'm catching up with some of my California episodes I recorded. I mentioned that I'm going to be leading the New England Cider Tour on October 31st. It's like a kickoff to the 25th annual Franklin County Cider Days. It's 25 years of an amazing festival, and I sure hope you could come to any and all parts of that. Now, the New England Cider Tour, I'm doing a little bit differently. If you want to go, you need to send me an email. Send it to Ria, that's spelled R-I-A, at ciderchat.com. I have been getting emails in from folks, and it looks like we're doing pretty good to get this tour going, but it's going to be closing down in September, and I'm not releasing an episode every week. So if you don't remember it now, press the pause button and send me an email now, because I know how podcasts go. You listen and it's like, what was I supposed to do? I can't remember. Well, you want to go on this New England Cider Tour, because we're going to be starting and returning to Greenfield, Mass., which is the hub of Franklin County Cider Days. And we're going to find out what Nicole Labonte has been doing since she moved on from Farnham Hill. Of course, Nicole has been there for 15 years and is just a fantastic person, a really good cider maker, a force to be reckoned with. I had the opportunity to judge cider with her last year at a competition, and it was absolute delight, and I've gotten to know her as a fellow New Englander. So we'll be touching base with Nicole again and seeing what is going on in the cider world for her. So that's one of the little glimpses into the itinerary that I'm still kind of tweaking out, but have no fear, folks. This side of tour is going to happen, and you want to be on that bus. You don't want to like be arriving to Franklin County and saying, oh, what do I got to do? And then seeing like this bus full of people laughing gleefully, heading out on the road for one heck of a day to be drinking cider along routes and meeting really interesting makers in my spot of Ciderville. I mean, that's really what it is getting the opportunity to share with you a bit about my spot of Ciderville. And dang, you know, I have to say, there's no place like home. There's no place like home. And despite all that, I love it everywhere. Oh boy, go figure. So much good news. So anyways, again, send me an email. This is for October 31st of 2019, the upcoming second annual New England Cider Tour, a one-day experience out on the highways and byways and country roads of New England. Send an email to me, Rhea@ciderchat.com. Please join me in tipping your glass to Ambrosia. Ambrosia just became the newest patron of Cider Chat via the Cider Chat Patreon page. And Patreon sets up a website to, well, kind of give a tip, if you will, to this here podcaster. It's designed to help content providers, and certainly Cider Chat is a content provider producing a lot of info about cider, not only in one region of the world, but worldwide. And so this is a nice way to help support the podcast. It's kind of like going into the cider bar and saying, hey, thank you. Thank you for your service. You know, putting that dollar bill down when you get a glass of cider from the server. Well, on the podcast, I have to be pretty direct. And obviously, Ambrosia could relate to that. So thank you so much for what you've done. You're really leading the charge there. If you don't know Ambrosia, she is a general manager at the Northman Cider Bar in Chicago. So I am over the moon just to know her. She's super cool. And to also know, here's another little tidbit, if you haven't heard yet, she's going to be leading the Calvados tasting on Friday night at the Franklin County Cider Days. So that's on November 1st. You could come do the kickoff tour with me, totally cider tour up to New England, and then you're in town and you are ready to then have a very fun night with one of the events that night going to the Calvados tasting. Yeah, that's going to be good. All right, when we come back, we're going to get to this main feature chat with Randall Graham.
There is a reason why we do it like this. There is a reason why we drink it like this. There is a reason.
I've often been asked, what is one of those memorable chats that you have with somebody that, you know, just kind of really stands out? And truthfully, all the chats stand out. There's something special about each person that I've had the opportunity to talk to, no doubt. This particular chat had a different circumstance around it because it wasn't just a sit-down. It was a ride. It was a ride straight up a side of a California hillside where we should have probably been in a Jeep, but we were in like a low wagon rider going up to the very, very top, going over like precipices where I thought we were just going to fall off, like kind of go over the edge of a volcano and straight down. But no, the driver was none other than Randall Graham, and he knew exactly where he was going. It was like riding with a kid in a candy store who was just so happy to finally find his place, his sense of place on the hillside from the lower valley of San Juan Bautista to the tall mountaintop. He found this area a number of years ago and named it Popolashum. And it means paradise. It's taken from the Olan natives. That was the word that they used for this site. But truly, it is a paradise. It's the estate plantation of Bonnie Doon Vineyard. It's 280 acres, and 80 of the acres have already been planted with grapes and other crops. Well, some of those crops are orchards. There's Aspelia of different apple varieties that are looking really great. And also high up on the hill from base level where the San Andreas Fault is and the grapes are, you go up this hill 300, 400 feet up straight up the hill, essentially, and you'll see pears up there and also more grapes. I think he has some Grenache, if I recall correctly, and who knows what now. It is a magnificent landscape, one that always calls to me and just screams California. But there is a quietness there, a solitude, a slice of heaven, a piece of paradise. We're going to be on this journey with Randall for a very intimate conversation, and it'll take us wherever we go, and I hope you so enjoy it as much as I do. So let's raise our glass and make sure that is full and join this conversation with the founder, Mr. President for Life at Bonnie Toon Vineyard, Randall Graham. Now, this is kind of interesting here. Do you drive up here very often, Randall?
No, not so often. In fact, I'm not even sure if the car is going to clear some of this brush. And there's no cell reception up here.
No cell reception, so. Over the course of a 10-day period, 1,000 goats, along with 3 dogs, visited Papa Lachum to help clear out the undergrowth to make way for vineyards and a couple of palms. With Randall at the helm of the wagon, we drove up what felt like old goat paths. Perhaps they were large enough for a donkey and a cart. And still, we just kept on moving to get to the top. The soil was dry and arid, and yet there was greenery everywhere. The flowers were in full bloom. Vistas in every direction that you looked, and a sense of serenity, especially when we reached the very top. If ever there was going to be a safari with a Lone Ranger, this was it. And it was all happening at Papa Lachum. Took it all in and then headed back down. We stopped halfway at picnic tables and what was once a large stable for horses. It is here that we had our chat. We begin this moment right after opening a bottle of Eric Bordelais 2017 Cormet that had been gifted to me by Eric, and I in turn decided to bring it to California on my next trip to share it with Randall Graham, who had introduced me to so much, and of course, Bordelais himself. It is there that we begin this conversation over a glass of French cider.
Cormier. Qu'est-ce que c'est Cormier?
Sorbus domesticus.
Or Sorbus domesticus.
Or they might say in Germany.
No.
S-O-R-B-U-S. So I'm saying...
It's not Sorbus.
It is a Sorbus tree.
Yeah.
Yeah, they call it the Sorbus tree. You're right about that. Yep. Yep. Well,
don't see a lot of those in this part of the world.
I know, but, you know, everybody is now like, let me do this. And I saw one other maker, I think, in Germany working with that. Let's see. So this is, I forgot what this was. I want to say it's 6%. That's what I love about these products, the low alcohol.
So he, Eric, what I hear is everyone goes to see Eric and they want to know his secrets because he does things that nobody else can do.
Right.
And I think if I asked him technical questions, I think he would have shared information because we have kind of a slightly different relationship. But I didn't want to do that because I didn't want to sort of, anyways. But I just try to think about how he makes low alcohol stable wines, and obviously he has to filter them because you you have to filter them to keep them from re-fermenting in the bottle, and they clearly mm-hmm. don't re-ferment in the bottle. Mm-hmm. And the question, of course, is how do you stop fermentation? How do you stop it at 4.5%? And I kind of imagine that he ferments them very cold and probably does successive racking. That's kind of...
My sense was, and like, I don't think he makes anything 4%. All of his is like 6%.
The Poiré Granit is like 4.5%.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, that Poiré is, yeah, I'm thinking the ciders.
Pears don't have as much sugar,
yeah,
perhaps, as the apples. But the Poiré, so I think, is only 4.5%, 5% max.
When we were there in September, I felt he was very transparent.
Mm-hmm.
And he's increasingly becoming more transparent, which is nice. He's kind of coming out to the world again after Didier.
Yeah.
He, you know, it's sometimes hard to follow because he's going, you know, from French to English. But what he was saying is that he often talks about filtering before he starts fermenting.
Mm-hmm.
So he filtered, which is not something that I hear any other...
Well, what you're doing is you're lowering the nutrient load.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, by the solids are also serve mm-hmm. as nutrients.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you're depleting nutrients. So what you really want to stop a fermentation from raging is a nutrient poor mm-hmm. cider.
Right. So then people would be doing maybe a keeved cider, but that would be the way to do it, to do like a keeved cider and to...
Remind me again what a keeved cider is.
Where you have very low nutrients, therefore, like you're saying, there's... at a certain time,
slow.
The yeast are going to stop.
Yeah.
They're just going to stop because there's nothing to
but
go.
But they're so, you don't have a lot of window. It's not a very big fermentation that you're doing.
Right,
so.
Right, yeah.
And then the question is, of course, how does he keep the natural CO2, or does he have to recarbonate it to get... You know, if you're filtering...
I think it's bottled condition. So he's doing like a... It's natural carbonation. I don't think he's doing forced carbonation. He is changing his market right now. So there's something going on there because he has gone to smaller bottles.
Yeah.
Which is great, you know, when you're a cider tourist, you're able mm-hmm. to... Because this is a heavy bottle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that takes up a lot of luggage space. So he might be forced carbonating that, but I think most of his stuff is all bottle condition and natural carbonation.
Well, if you do that, though, you need to ferment. You need to be able to. You need counterpressure fillers. You need to fill. You need pressure tanks. It has to be ferment. You know, to hold the pressure. Are you thinking?
Well, I'm thinking not like, kind of like a champagne method.
But if so it's a re-fermentation.
Yeah, in the bottle. Yeah.
But then, can't do that with you can't do that with sweet though. That's the problem. See, in other words, if it's a dry cider, you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
But a sweet one, it doesn't work.
Well, this, even if the sweet is kind of like with like the pear, where there is just that.
Unless he adds back sweet juice. But again, unless it's... This is the problem. If there's any sweetness...
It would re-ferment
yeah, at right. that much alcohol. It's very... So it has to be... There has to be a final filtration. It has to be filtered. All the yeast have to be filtered.
He does filter. He talked about the filter and... in fact,
you have to be like a super...
It's a super... But there is no... I mean... As one maker just said recently, theoretically possible, practically not, because there's nothing that's so sterile that it's going to always kind of re-ferment, unless you're in like a science lab, which he is not. And
well, if it re-ferments, the bottles explode and you end up with dry cider. You know,
right.
end up with sweet. This is it's hard to make. I'm telling you, it's not easy to make sweet cider.
Yeah,
that's why I really was racking my brains trying to figure out how he does it.
I think the way people do it, classically, the only way to do it is to do it keeved. Because you stop the fermentation a certain time and there's residual
sugars. If you can do it, that is...
Yeah, I think that is the French way, is to do a keeved cider.
Right.
Definitely.
You know, I tried to do that with our quarry. I had the juice at 32 degrees. It was still fermenting at 32.
Yeah.
32. I mean, like, theoretically.
Yeah. Well, this is the ongoing conversation constantly about how do you get a sweet cider, because so many people like a sweet cider. This Cormet, he went for because he got the inspiration from a couple in their 90s. Mm-hmm. This was something that was made kind of common at one time, and now it's probably going to go wild because everybody, you know, will want to try doing it if you could get it. But they're little tiny buggers, right? So I'm wondering here, what is it, straight Cormet, you know, or is there...
Who knows? I mean, it's like quince. Trying to make cider out of quince is like futile. You need a carrier. You need some liquid.
Mm. Yeah.
You know... Cidre des Vulcans, of course.
Yes, I do, yeah.
Isn't that incredible? Their quince cider is something.
There's a lot of quince coming out now, and I've heard about, you know, people making 100% quince. Well, you mentioned, though, that there is quince that you can eat, right? So I'm only wondering, and I'll hear from somebody, like, listeners from, like, New Zealand are inspired to, you know, try quince, so they're, you know, picking it there, and people up in the Pacific Northwest are doing quince. So we're seeing it more and more. I haven't had 100% quince yet.
It's got to be insanely expensive because there's no juice in quince as you. Well.
I think for the most part people are just doing a base, but this is just exquisite, huh?
Yeah, it's great. Thank you for sharing this.
I know that I really wanted to have you be able to experience this because it's just so unique, and I've been so appreciative of you taking the time to talk with me, and certainly that holiday dinner was really inspiring too.
Uh-huh.
What?
Ooh, I just figured out a trick. Ooh.
In terms of the sugar keeping.
Ooh, yeah.
Because that's
never thought of this before. So in other words, nitrogen is kind of the main energy source for yeast. So when yeast are building up their population, they use up a lot of nitrogen. So for example, so normally you filter juice to filter the solids out, but until the fermentation starts, you're not really getting a lot of nutrient depletion. But if you like let the fermentation go just a little bit and then filtered it. So you did, and then let it go again and then filtered it. So you did your filtrations early in the fermentation, you could knock your nutrients way down.
Mm-hmm.
Way down, such that you, in other words,
that's a lot of playing there that most people wouldn't feel so confident to do. Like, what is that optimal time to do that filtration? That would be really key.
I mean,
it's trial and error.
Well,
but
I think you could just do it by observation. I think you wouldn't. I mean, you look at. You just need a microscope and a counting chamber and just look at your yeast populations. When your yeast has achieved a certain population, you filter it. You know, you could probably over time just figure out, you know, after 2 days filter it, and then after another, you know, and just or observe just like the first beginnings of some pétillance, and then filter it. Mm-hmm. So it may not be as tricky as when,
right, so out of reach, but there is that dance. I mean, that's what makes a fine maker is knowing that perfect time to step
but,
in.
But the thing about Eric that's so cool is, I mean, I'm sure Didier wouldn't even have known about this kind of stuff.
It's at another level at time, right? To technology wouldn't have been way.
But you wouldn't use that technology for making grape wine.
Right.
And you wouldn't use that technique. But Eric, he just figured this out by first principles. It's like, I have a problem. I want to solve it. How am I going to solve this problem? And just you have to use your. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe he's doing it a totally different way.
Perhaps. But I do hear a bit about filtering, and somehow that plays a big role. And you know, he does not like the classic Norman style farm cider, which I actually love. I always arrive and I like chug one of those like immediately just to get in the zone.
Why doesn't he like it? Too rustic, or?
I think a little too rustic. Yeah, from perhaps his palate, I'm not sure, or maybe because that's people are just staying at that level, and he wants to take it higher. And it's more that than anything else, because it's just so delicious.
Well, I think, you know, DuPont makes it a perfectly serviceable cider, don't you?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Not dreadful.
What do you have here?
This is a very limited release of Grenache Blanc, Grenache Gris from this. Our vintage, we made a total of 30 gallons.
Oh my goodness.
Not widely known.
Total of 30 gallons?
Yes.
Wow. Cheers to the best of luck in your amazing, amazing endeavor here. Mm.
So this is small scale home wine making at its finest.
What a blast.
Fermented in 5 gallon glass bottles.
Mm-hmm.
This is all natural acidity, put it through mallow, and no filtration. This is a wine that will live 20, 30 years. Nobody normally thinks of Grenache Blanc and or Grenache Gris as having so much acidity. This is again post-mallow.
Post-mallow. And right from those vines down the hill that we went by. So the Blanc.
Blanc and Gris.
Yep.
Half and half.
Okay. Yeah. I love your label too, with the stars and it's kind of the spiral a bit that you have going down there, and the planting, the way you're setting it up, quite lovely. This is ...2017.
Still way too young. I mean, this wine is...
But how exciting to be able to taste it now and imagine, like, 15 years down the line, what that would...
It's going to be good. I have to make sure to live a long time.
Well, it's always, you know, always something to work towards.
So this is Bangui Reserve. This is from purchased grapes, but we did this really special technique. This was aged in glass, 5 gallon glass bottles on lees, and then bottled without filtration.
Wow.
So it's kind of
pink wine of the earth.
Pink wine, kind of the complexity of an interesting white.
Oh my gosh.
Doesn't have a lot of primary fruit aromas that you find in typical rosés. So it's lost that kind of simple.
It's kind of like a earthiness to the aroma, though. Really walks you into the glass.
So there's a lot of, probably more than I would like, malolactic character, a lot of diacetyl. There's a little more butter than I would. Buttered popcorn than I would care for. But.
Do you want a little more acid in there, or what?
Yeah, a little more acid would be nice, but we didn't want to mess with this. It's all natural.
Yeah. Wow, so delicate. What would you have that with, food-wise?
Scallops might be nice.
Scallops, something really soft would kind of like accentuate the softness of that mouthfeel. That's crazy. And the color, that kind of light, let me see, it's a little hard for me to see here. But.
So it's a beautiful color, it's kind of a coral.
That's a good, like a light pink coral. Amazing clarity.
Well, for an unfiltered wine, it's
good. I was going to say, yeah. I mean, you only really get that when you're like at that homemade, you know, hobbyist level where you could rack and rack and rack, but at a large capacity. Yeah, no, that's perfect.
Yeah, we can't sell this wine to save our lives, but that's neither here nor there.
Folks not interested.
Well, it's too esoteric. It's too weird. It's like, I don't know. Maybe we're just doing too many different things. But I think maybe you're not charging enough. Maybe if I charged $100, it would make it be a lot easier to sell it.
Right, right. Yeah. Isn't that interesting? Is this only available?
Pretty much at the winery.
At the winery? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's exquisite. I mean,
thanks.
Really.
I like it. I think it's good.
Again, you know, sitting out here, Randall, it just changes everything. When you sit in with the maker and do that, it just brings you at a level that you just can't ever, you know, translate unless you actually experience it.
So this is Bienvenido Syrah, which I rather like. This is, we've been making this wine for years and years. And
2014.
This is the last vintage we made. They, they stopped selling me after this year. But, oh well.
Wow.
So this is 12% Viognier. 88% Syrah, 12% Viognier.
Look at that. Well, I'm excited when you can make this.
I know. Like, what the heck?
Wow.
Hold on. Maybe I should be a winemaker. Like, what was I thinking? Why am I fucking around with
you? Well, you're doing a lot of different things, that's for sure. And that, I think that's what's unique about who you are, is that you see outside of the box. And I mean, I'm going to just conjecture. I mean, that's a big part of who you are. That's what a brand that you created, like, way out of the box.
Too far out of the box, I'm afraid.
In what way? Too many directions?
Too many directions. Too hard for people to understand. It's like...
So the brand piece. Well, what would you want people to understand about Bonnie Doon? Or Randall Graham? Do you keep the two separate, or
I don't know. I think I've mixed them up so much. I mean,
but you are Bonnie Doon, so I don't think.
I mean, I think, you know, it's like if I were to die anytime soon, on my gravestone, I'd want it to say, "This time I'm serious." It's like I'm serious. Like, this time I'm serious. So I mean, I think. I think
that's a good epitaph. That's an excellent epitaph. Oh my god, wow. Yeah, but I mean, doesn't that kind of go with the territory in order to create, you know, you're an artist, you know, in a way, and you're, I mean,
but you know,
stop me if I'm wrong here, but
you know, yeah, but people don't care.
Had a little
they don't
meant to bring a little punctum thing, but I don't have it. Darn, he should use a screw cap. Doesn't he, like, pay attention to anything?
This is so elegant.
No, it is.
This is super elegant. Everything's
elegant. In fact, he's going to come out with Calvados this year.
Mm-hmm.
Up to this point, somebody else has been distilling for him. So he's going to come out. And his bottle, unlike everybody else's Calvados, it's just going to be a clear bottle. Mm-hmm. And he's going to have it etched. Because he spent so much time designing that one. He said it took him 6 months just to design that label. It's like, oh, Eric. Now that's the artist.
Yeah, I know.
Which I love about
obsessive,
that.
Obsessive.
Good. Yeah, you know. So, but getting back to that question, you know, it is kind of a balance of...
You know, I mean, my issue is that I don't know. I'm not objective at all about this, but I think historically the wine business has been a playground for me, and I've experimented and I've tried this and that, and some of the things work, some of them work less well. I think I'm flattering myself by comparing myself to Frank Zappa, but there are some similarities. You know, his work was uneven, to say the least. I mean, some of the stuff is like terrible, but like some of it is like crazy genius, like just so mm-hmm, far ahead mm-hmm. of everyone else. That mm-hmm. so I think I confuse people with just the number of things that we've done over the years, and it's been too. I mean, I don't know. I'm just projecting in my own fantasy here that it's been about cleverness, and you know, we can try this because nobody has ever tried this before. Let's try this other thing. Nobody's ever done that before. Let's try this new thing. I think at a certain point, if you're serious, as I said on my epitaph, and this time I am serious, it has to be about the product itself. And I don't think people see, many, many people of our customers really see the product anymore or experience the product itself anymore. They see, oh yeah, that's Randall. He's got this clever, new, crazy thing he's doing. But I want the focus. I think what I need to do successfully is make the product, not about me, not about my cleverness, but about the product itself. And by extension, the land, the place, the story, the real story, but get people to really consider it without prejudice, you know, experience it, you know, like everything else. And it's hard in the new world to give yourself provenance. I mean, you know, we say things are good because we think they're good, but we don't have history, we don't have mm-hmm. hundreds of years of track record that such and such is, you know, and so much of what we think of as good isn't really good. I mean, it's they're trickle, you know, like those Napa Valley Cabernets that sell for $100 are, in my mind, undrinkable. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or I should say, you can't drink more than a half a glass. I mean, you can drink half a glass, but after that, they're undrinkable. You just don't want to drink anymore of them. Mm. So, I mean, is that an accomplishment? I don't know.
Hmm. I wonder if, you know, listening to you, it's so interesting because it's the education. It always goes back to the education. And when you said, you know, what I'd love to have is like events here and tastings, well, that would be part of the education, right?
I mean, you know,
and it's always that. I mean, wine's been around forever, and still.
If you can get people here, take them out to the vineyard, show them what you're doing, why it's different, what the different things you're doing that other people aren't doing.
Yeah, it's that's
like,
it.
Done.
Boom.
You're done.
Yeah, you're done. Yeah, yeah.
It's like, hold on, why are those vines look so different? They're little tiny things. They're grown on gobelet, and so there's no irrigation. Let's see, that's like a ton per acre. Like, oh, that's why it's so expensive. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I understand now.
Mm-hmm. Mm. But, you know, the interesting thing is, this is what I hear from cider makers, but from hearing that from somebody like yourself who's been in the wine business, like going back like 79, right, you know?
Not quite, 81.
81?
Yeah.
Okay, whatever.
Whatever.
Whatever, you know? A long time.
Yeah.
And that same kind of marketing piece where people, the consumers, understand it, because the real bigger issue is consumers are so inundated with so many choices. Like, it used to be vanilla, chocolate, and strawberries.
Right.
Life was easy. And in the wine world, it's like, well, what is a Cabernet? Like, how should I taste this? I mean, going to this Grenache, like, I'm not sure exactly, to tell you the truth, what I should be tasting mm-hmm. there. So, you know, my descriptor is, I'm sitting in the freaking vineyard where it's made. I'm sitting with the maker. I mean, oh my God, my mind is like exploding here. But what should I be going for there? What, other than, oh, I like it, it tastes great, there is a learning curve there. And unless you're kind of like a super geek like I am, who's willing to throw myself out there and try to learn as I go along, bumbling along. Otherwise, I'm just pretending. So that issue of the consumer not connecting to what's being marketed to them, that is, it's interesting. That's an age-old problem.
But, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, if their credit card works, like, do you really care? I mean, yes.
You care if you want them to keep on coming back.
If you want them,
right? Because customer loyalty.
You want them to keep coming back, so you hope that they truly grok what you're doing. That's ideal. But like, how? I mean, is that even realistic? I mean, again, it's like getting them to buy the thing in the first place. That's a win.
Sometimes
people like things for the wrong reasons. They, you know, like. People bought our wines for many years because they like the clever labels. They like the clever labels.
That's good. Branding. Yep. And that's probably where you were a genius, because you did set yourself apart in that cleverness.
I know, but I was hoisted by my own petard. I mean, it's like he who lives by cleverness dies by cleverness. So that's, you know... Now you go to the store, there are labels that are much more clever than mine. They're much more outré. They're more flamboyant. They're better, even better. Some of them are horrific, they're beautiful, beautiful labels. And the quality of packaging has improved enormously in the last 10, 15 years. It's incredible. I'm not going to win in the land of packaging anymore. I did for a while, but not anymore. So you got to find another way. It's got to be in the wine itself. And the story and your market. And you have to decide what you can do best and most where you can deliver the most value. And being a large winery, you can't do that anymore. I can't do that very well anymore. Because other wineries can do it much better and cheaper and more efficiently than I can, for sure.
But there is only one Randall Graham. And, you know, I mean, I'm kind of sentimental in that way. And I don't know if I am an anomaly. But I know when people hear you on Cider Chat or, you know, when I talk about you in different circles, people know who you are.
Yeah.
There is a certain notoriety about that.
I wish I could trade in like 90% of the notoriety for like 10% of like actual tangible
come up and buy that,
you know, sell a product,
baby, bring the, you know, ching ching, baby, bring it over here.
That would be good.
Well, I mean, maybe that's a way to transfer, you know, so that, you know, if you don't have that in your cellar, what the heck, then, you know, right? That's the way it kind of works. Like, you could have all these other things, but if you don't have something by Randall Graham in your cellar, you're not really showing your wine knowledge, because that should be one of those, to me, that should be one of those kind of standard.
Yeah, you know, I know. Ironically, the cigar of the last 10 years, the best cigars we've ever made, we're still not successful in selling it. And it's like an old brand. It's like an old like an old restaurant. You know, a restaurant is great in the day.
So
maybe it's producing better food than it ever has, but every brand has a life cycle. Every brand has a lifespan. And I'm afraid that my brand's lifespan is coming to an end unless I can figure out how to rebrand. Or I've been trying to breathe life into it for the last 10 years or 12 years since the sale of Big House, and I'm at my wit's end as far as the Bonnie Dune brand. I mean, we have our followers, the people who follow it, I mean, realize the wine's better than it's ever been. Great, but it's trying to breathe life into something that's slowly dying, and it's it's sad. But anyways, I hope to live again, and Lone Ranger rides off into the sunset to fight another day.
Well, you have a lot of directions you can go.
Yeah, a couple up the hill.
No,
like my last, the last stand.
Yeah, yeah.
I need a horse, like my kingdom for a horse.
Right. Well, look what you got,
I got
here,
a
right?
Stable. Oh, right.
Stable.
I got the stable.
You got the stable.
Need the darn horse.
Yeah, and then you can bring the people up on the wagon if you need that. I don't know. I'm like this kind of, my pendulum always swings towards happiness. It's one of my major faults.
That's great. That's not a fault.
It's not a fault. Yeah. What you're saying is not unusual. I don't know if that helps. But at the same time, I feel so freaking hopeful because I hear from so many people constantly, you know, I'm just a podcaster, dude. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm doing. I'm a podcaster who's starting to do totally sided tours, you know, like, I don't know what that's going to do. I have no idea. But I hear this passion from people who are excited at a level they never did before because of people like yourself who are willing to experiment, do this kind of piece, and, you know, explore the terroir at a level. That, to me, there is like a huge market for that.
I know. I just have to get out of my own way.
What an amazing safari into cider and wine at Popular Shum with Randall Graham. If your cup is not emptied now, I'd be really surprised. Or if you are driving somewhere and don't have anything to drink, you're most likely parched. I'm sorry about that. I hope that ends soon. But dang, this was an amazing conversation, and it really blew me out of the water, the ability to really dig deep here. And it was one part driving up the hill and down the hill along those like little goat paths or donkey cart paths, thinking that you're just going off the end of the world and only to come yet to a beautiful vista. This is what puts life into a maker's vision and the vitality of the products that they create. But it doesn't just end there. I really want to recommend that you go to the Bonnie Doon Vineyard Tasting Room located in Davenport, California. This is smack right next to the Pacific Ocean, right on Highway 1. And it goes, that highway stretches between Santa Cruz, California, and San Francisco. It is one of the most spectacular spots. And I'm not just being, well, kind of talking about my own hood, if you will, my own backyard, a place that I've fallen in love with because I lived there. No, this is a place you want to go to. There's multiple places to pull over, take in California. I mean, if you fly into San Francisco, you fly into San Jose, it is such a short drive to get there, and you're in absolute beauty, places that you could find a little bit of solitary moments on your own. The highway's there, but it's just a feeling, a sense of everybody slowing down and being fed by the majesty and the beauty of it all. And I do believe that that's what really feeds Randall Graham. And this guy's been in this region for a very long time. And there's a reason why I think we settled where we do settle, and how it really feeds our creativity, feeds our mind, and then it then trickulates to the product that we are producing. And in this case, it is his wine. And also, we're hoping for perhaps some cider and perry in the future, because there are an orchard of quince, apples, and pears at Popular Shum. Just an amazing, isn't it? Oof. I'd like to also go back with a couple mentions here. The Big House brand and Cardinal Zin, those were both Bonnie Doon labels. You'll often see them in Trader Joe's now. And that was then sold by Bonnie Doon to a larger company. And that's what he was referring to there. And then I said a quote from a cider maker about filtration being theoretically possible, but practically not. And that came from Eleanor Leger of Eden Specialty Ciders in Vermont. I got that quote from her when I recorded during the Beginning Cider Maker Conference workshop at CiderCon. And it's really stuck in my mind about filtration. I just found that was absolutely fascinating. And then I mentioned the holiday dinner that really led me to this conversation with Randall, and that happened in December. And a big tip of the glass to Nicole Todd of Santa Cruz Cider Company for inviting me to that Bonnie Doone holiday dinner. I hope I get another invite. Oh, fingers crossed. I would go out to California by hook or by crook or thumbing it there just to get back to that holiday party and to be in the presence of greatness. And I hope you get that. I mean, somebody like Randall Graham, to be so transparent, he just gave us a lot of insight to who he is and to a look at a market from a very long perspective, which is really something. I think there's a familiarity of how do we keep on going on? Is a brand, does it have a life? And I think that could be true, but I certainly hope not. Not for this particular brand, because Bonnie Doone Vineyard really gives me hope in the world. Hope that you could have this kind of wild genius, this enigmatic person that I can relate to, who isn't always understood, but really creates so much. And we are all the better because of that. So a big tip of the glass to Bonnie Doone Vineyard, Papa Lachume, and of course, Randall Graham. When I return, I'll be sharing with you some very big news for Cider Chat on an upcoming journey out and about into Ciderville. On July 16th, I woke up to the following tweet and different conversations popping up on Twitter. This tweet was posted by Duck Chicken Cider, which is based in the south side of London. And it said, "How do we get at Cider Chat, Rhea, over to Ross Cider's Fest?" Now, you've heard me talking about the Cider Fest that Ross Cider and Perry Company put on each summer. This year it's going to be taking place essentially over Labor Day weekend, as we know. That's the tail end of August into like the 1st of September. And it is a 3-day festival that actually kicks off up on Thursday night with the local cider club, where they're going to have a speaker in from the Basque region, best known on social media as @CiderZale. And then it goes into 3 days of music, cider, and beer. People are camping out in the orchard. I mean, something that I can only dream about happening in the U.S. that way. I hope we could do these types of festivals. And I've really been excited to hear about it. In fact, Albert Johnson had invited me, and I couldn't commit last year when he invited me, Albert being part of the Ross Cider family. And so I had to decline. As many of you know, that I have an elderly mother I take care of, and I just didn't know what was going to happen. Well, this tweet came out that I just read from Duck Chicken Cider, and I saw a couple more tweets with Ross Cider responding, and then Ashton, which is Dick Whitcomb, responding to. It was just kind of like this conversation happening without me. How do we get her here? And I thought, you know, to myself, dang, do I wait like a whole year before I go to the UK, a land that I really want to get to and experience the Ross Cider Fest? You never know what a year will bring. And shoot, mom's doing pretty darn good. We got her care set up. The home fires are doing good, so to speak. No fires, just the home's doing good. And so I started responding and thinking about it and actually thinking seriously about it. And so now, guess what? I asked for what I needed, and the Brits have replied. So I'm getting set up. I'm going to be staying in London with Colleen and James of Duck Chicken Cider. Who knows what that will be? I'll be there like 2 nights, and then the three of us are going to drive out to Ross-on-Wye for the Ross Cider Fest. Hopefully we'll get there in time for the Cider Club on Thursday night. I'm getting just chills thinking about this. I'm going to be sleeping out in the orchard in a tent that I'm borrowing from Albert. So I'm packing my little sleeping bag, my summer bag in the backpack, just kind of like the old days that I used to do. And I'm going to be at the Ross Cider Fest this year at the end of August. And for a lot of love and a lot of good coordination with UK makers, UK cider fans who just want to be connected. I'm just like over the moon for this. What an opportunity. So yay, this is going to really kind of change things in that I get to really delve into with the local cider fans and being there. I just feel really blessed, basically. So stay tuned for a wild journey out and about into Ciderville. And this train stop is going to be in London and Herefordshire. Coming right up, actually. This podcast goes live the 24th. So in less than a month's time, or about a month, I'll be in the UK doing this. And thank goodness for frequent flyer miles and all that for making it happen. I'm just really encouraged. You know, when you get an invitation like that, it's really hard to turn it down and to stay in the momentum of cider. So that really goes on the tail end of Randall Graham talking about, like, how do you keep that brand surviving? You know, how do you keep the energy going? And partly, to me, it's just believe. Or as Joseph Campbell would say, follow your bliss and the rest will come along. And that seems to be working out so far for Cider Chat. By hook or by crook, we're making it. So thank you for all your support. I'm really hearing that encouragement to keep on keeping on with this amazing podcast and all the stories that we get to share and opportunities like this. Yes, Ciderville, we are going to the UK. You might be coming with me virtually, but there's going to be definitely a full cup waiting for you, filled with so much info of that scene there. So stay tuned. In the meanwhile, this is a wrap for now, and this is Rhea Windcaller signing off. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
There is a reason why we do it like this. There is a reason why we do it like this. There is a reason why we drink it like this. There is a reason why we do it like this. We like cider. We like pie. The blossoms kicking up our feet. There is a reason. There is a reason. There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms kicking up our feet. Oh yeah. We like cider. There is a reason why we do it like this. Ba-dum, ba-dum.